Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you the news, views, and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Mall Over Podcast, Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, and lots of other podcatcher type affairs. Another full house this week. Ben, Phil, and Doug, good evening, gentlemen.
Evening.
Now then.
You alright, Ben?
Yeah.
Ah, good.
Thought I'd missed my chance.
Well, you're going to get plenty of chance this evening. That's if you can get a word in edgeways, because pretty
three,
angry. You might see on Twitter on Saturday.
Are absolutely hanging out their arse, isn't they?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if I lose my trail of thought at any time, it's because I've had approximately 3 hours sleep due to the Super Bowl, which was decent. Right, let's not talk about rugby. Let's first of all briefly mention France versus Italy. First game of the Six Nations Saturday afternoon. How excited, Ben, do we get about the French, or do we have to level it off and say Italy were pretty damn terrible?
I think you can get excited about the French. Some other games this weekend, which we won't mention, have shown it's not that easy to score tries. You know, when they were given the chance, they took them. I just thought Italy were just, as they've been for so long, they would have a good piece of play, but then do something daft. Either get turned over or give away a penalty. And then their defence just wasn't organised enough to regroup, and it would cost them time after time. One try was off. They turned over in their own 22, two penalties, and down in the 22 in France scored. But to be fair to Italy, the new 10 had a few flashes where he looked decent.
Garbisi. Montiuani looked quite good, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, that famous Italian heritage name.
Other than just one really bad pass that cost a try, I thought
Varney,
well, at scrum half, and yeah. You know, they were just outclassed by France, really, and there's no disgrace in that at the moment. You know, and a couple of those tries were really easy. The one Dulan scored was just almost odd. There's just no one in the way to stop them going through. I'd be more enthusiastic about Italy than I was this time last year, because at least they do look like they've got a little bit of threat. Yeah. They did score a really good try. But I think we know France are a good side, especially with DuPont. And I think they're probably odds-on favourites now, aren't they?
They'd have to be.
Oh, definitely. I think the good thing about Italy was they did show a bit of flair, a bit of excitement, a bit of want to do something different rather than just kind of keeping to core skills, which they're not good enough at. They tried to add a bit of an extra element. They had what looked like a fairly decent try to me, disallowed for a forward pass. They looked dangerous at times, but yeah, it's hard to say too much about the influence this has on the Six Nations, other than France looked good and Italy might pose a little bit more threat at some point.
Yeah, I mean, they carried hard. That first half an hour, the likes of Negri and the number eight, was it Lamaro? Is he the new?
Yeah.
The new number eight. They carried hard through the middle. And Negri, for one, he was always making holes. But they seemed to be getting in each other's way as they were trying to move the ball forward. Once they'd found the hole and punched it through, they were almost tripping over each other. The big lock as well was another one that was that I thought had a decent game. I can't remember. Sperardini. That might have been Sperardino. Sperardio.
That's Lazzaroni.
Lazzaroni, that's the one. I mean, I'm just firing Italian names out now.
Russ Butcher's names of pasta.
the ones with bow ties?
Yeah.
Lovely. Farfully. But yeah, obviously you mentioned DuPont there, Jalibert. I was impressed by Villiers, who has had a bit of a road, a bit of a journey to get to where he's been. But all over the pitch, they offer a threat. They carry hard. They've got big guys in the middle. Fiku, is now starting to become the player I think everyone thought he was going to be. Now he's found that position in the centres and made it his own. You know, he's shifted along the back line a bit, hasn't he, Fiku, throughout his France career. And the likes of Thomas, and Doulin, and obviously Villiers. And, that's without Vakitawa. Rates, lots of quality they've got to come back in as and when. It's hard to look past France at the moment for running away with this tournament, and the fact that they have to go to Twickenham, I think, is neither here nor there, because we'll come on to that in a minute.
You could almost have predicted France becoming a good side when you take the flair of France and the traditional ability to make something out of nothing, and then you put it behind a defence drilled by probably the best defensive drilling coach in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Let's not beat around the bush. The reason they're good is because their system is good. They've got a well-run domestic league with a structure in place that actually fosters two professional leagues that can churn out players.
Yeah, but they've had that for 10 years.
Not to the extent that they've got it now, but I do think you look at they're supporting two fully professional leagues. There's even professional teams in the third tier of rugby. If England could pull their finger out and get four or five blokes at the top that could run a league, would be maybe able to compete with their level of output. I think they're only going to get stronger, and I think they'll be the ones that actually move forward and compete with New Zealand.
We saw that in the autumn, didn't we? In the final of the Nations Cup, where France basically turned up with a fourth string and still gave England a bit of a fright. And the strength and depth that they've got now,
and they've also got players that aren't afraid to play. There's no way on earth France are kicking with ball in hand with a five-man overlap.
Yeah, I mean, let's get on to. Let's get on to that, shall we? I mean,
did you see the overlap for the first French try, though?
Which one was the first French try?
Cretin, I think it was, scored under the posts.
Yes, yeah.
But there was, I think, 11 Italian defenders on the blind side.
Yeah, after about 5 minutes or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad times for Italy. But, hopefully they can improve and they can put something together, come up with a result as they move through the tournament. I mean, the reason we're all here is pretty much to talk about England, Scotland, isn't it? You know, what led from a week of optimism, Ollie Lawrence getting the nod to start at 12, Owen Farrell starting at 10. I don't think, and I've seen England play, you know, a lot of shit rugby, you know, that tour of New Zealand in 2007, 2008. When was the tour when we went to New Zealand and got absolutely bummed? I mean, we played some shit rugby then, but that was against...
Might have to narrow it down a little bit.
Yeah. I think, are you not thinking of the tour from hell in Australia?
Well, we had one in New Zealand as well.
Yeah, but the one everyone remembers for all-time bad tours was the Australia one where Wilkinson was the only first-teamer.
That could be right. That would have been 2007-ish, wouldn't it? I mean, either way.
Well, you know, I've got the internet here. Why don't I use that?
About 98, wouldn't it? 98?
No, be before that, wouldn't it? Surely. Sorry,
1998.
Was it 1998? Jesus Christ. My brain literally isn't working. So
no,
anyway.
I was just explaining to Mrs. Lensman Mark II that that's not working. I've just hit a wall.
Yeah.
I think it's too many head knocks.
Yeah.
Concussion. I'm gonna get another one in a minute.
But anyway, to lead me on to my wider point. I don't think I have witnessed a poorer England performance for quite, well, maybe ever, but for quite some time. Now, I don't accept, whilst Scotland played very well defensively, right? People saying that it was an incredible performance from Scotland. I'm not having that. It's an incredible result for Scotland, a fantastic result. But as far as incredible performances go, I'm not so sure. Because if it was an incredible performance, they would have taken the chances that they had to literally put England to bed, which they didn't, which meant that right until the very last, you know, point of the game where Hamish Watson stripped whoever it was and then they kicked the ball out, England could still have won with a try. Which would have been the ultimate fucking smash and grab.
So I don't disagree, but equally, I don't want to downplay that Scotland did play pretty well. They absolutely nailed their set plays in a way that Scotland don't usually do. Lineouts were spot on. Like,
they had enough penalties too, mate.
Yeah, I know. Itoje was getting up there, but the ball was going straight to the intended man pretty much every time. Scrums were solid. Scrums were good. Hamish Watson, I think, was immense, but he always is. I think Redpath was okay, did a better job than I was expecting him to. But you're right, it wasn't the kind of performance where you look at him and you go, Christ, if you guys play New Zealand, you're going to be in with a decent shout, or South Africa or whatever. They came up against all of the worst bits of England for the last 5 to 10 years that Doug's been ranting about, or not 10 years, 5 years, that Doug's been ranting about, including on last week's pod, without any of the good bits that Ben and I were highlighting on last week's pod. There was a complete lack of aggression in defence put together with this systematic formulaic game plan of two hits, kick, one hit, kick, without any ability for a single player on the pitch to make a decision. And if we've used the term overcoached once on this podcast, we've used it 100 times. And it was clear to see that there wasn't a single person on that pitch who was willing to make a decision and take a chance. Dan Robson comes in, running nine. You see, he's about to take a quick tap penalty, and then he goes, oh, no, we're not allowed to do things like that now under this system. We've got to wait and play the game. But every single... it's just bonkers to have a game plan and not to have any fallback when it's not working. Yes, the players were a bit flat, but I'm sure they could have found something to do to try something a bit different. How many times did Watson get the ball passed to him? I can't remember a single one.
He didn't touch the ball, I don't think, till like the 55th minute or something.
And that was fielding a kick.
And that was in R22.
How many times did May get the ball passed to him? pretty much none.
He was bad as well. England under the high ball were bad. England kicking the ball were bad. England's discipline was bad.
Kick chase was bad.
If your kicks are bad and your kick chase is bad and you're bad under the high ball, why play a kicking game? Why not switch it up? Use a big hitting 12 and then spin the ball wide. I say May and Watson. How many times did Slade get the ball past him? I think twice, and they were behind him.
Ollie Lawrence carried once for 3 meters in like the 60th minute and then got taken off. What a fucking poor bloke. You start in as an international to do a specific job, you know, to run hard, to break tackles, to get over the gain line, and you've got a fucking wallet. I can't even get an insult out for Owen Farrell. Like, I can't remember the last time Owen Farrell had a good game for England.
I can't remember.
I was going to say a sausage wallet. I was going to say a fucking, I don't know what I was going to say. A fucking walloper. I got confused between walloper and
something
and fucking all sorts of shit. Anyway, like, when was the last time Owen Farrell had a good game for England? We're playing this kick strategy, which we talked about in the autumn. We talked about it last week. We kicked a lot. We kicked against Italy in that last game of the Six Nations, and it didn't really work. I think the execution of the kicking was poor. We're trying to box off of 9, and Ben Youngs, it's a well-known fact, Ben Youngs is not very good at box kicking. We've highlighted it and mentioned this on several occasions, yet they still persist with doing that. And then you pick another 9 that's not very good at box kicking. And so when he comes on, the box kicking actually gets worse, if that's possible, because it was pretty shit anyway. And then you've got Owen Farrell playing at 10, who doesn't want to use his centres, even when we've got like a 5-man overlap, and he tries to kick it. Now, that to me is absolutely inflexibility of game plan. Good players, and Owen Farrell is a good player. He's, you know, he's arguably one of the best in the world in that 10-12 position. But it's almost like now he doesn't know what he is. Is he a 10? Is he a 12? Because he did not manage that game at all well at the weekend.
Well, and I think James, our friend James from Rugby Saracens, I think he probably had it right when because he's been saying for weeks they shouldn't be playing any of the Saracens players. And I think, although Atoje did give a couple of penalties, I thought he was a little bit unlucky with at least a couple of them.
Don't get me started on Andrew Brace, because I sounded salty as fuck on Saturday that we lost when I was tweeting, because I was so angry. But I thought Andrew Brace, that as well as the only thing worse than Andrew Brace on that pitch on Saturday were England.
I said partway through the game, I don't think he's biased. I just think he's fussy.
Shit. Oh, yeah, didn't think about him being biased. I just thought he was shit. Every breakdown, when we had the ball at the breakdown, or when they had the ball at the breakdown, he had his eyes lasered in on Itoje. How many times did you hear him say 4, step back 4, step back 4, just looking at Itoje and looking at the midfield? When it was the other way around, he didn't say anything to Scotland. And Itoje was behind the ruck. He wasn't even, a lot of the time, he wasn't even anywhere near offside. So that, he was laser focused on that, him.
That second, that Itoje penalty just before, just under our post in the first couple of minutes, I think that's a fair enough call. Itoje was being a bit lazy there, rolling away. But the penalty against him after he charged down the box kick from Ali Price, ran through, got the ball, got tackled, and then repositioned himself and put the ball out there.
Hill for sealing off, wasn't it?
No, it was Itoje for holding on. He signalled holding on. It was just an awful call. But
that's just a really frustrating one, because it's basically rewarding Scotland for bad play.
Exactly. What really frustrates me is the fact that if you watch the last half an hour, every single breakdown is 3 Scots going in off their feet every time, not supporting their own body weight. Never get called for it.
You can call a penalty every single ruck if you wanted to. the referee could legitimately call a penalty at every single ruck. So then he's choosing. Sorry, Ben. He's then choosing to penalise England more than Scotland. But go on.
He could have given us 40 penalties in the second half, and it wouldn't have made any difference.
True.
But yeah, what I was sort of, I got sidetracked by Itoje, but the other Saracens players that weren't anywhere near what we used to. You know, we've spoken about Farrell.
Billy was
non-existent. George, you know, his line-out's usually really reliable, but I thought Karen Dickey looked better when he came on. We'll probably get onto Daly in a minute. But, you know, James has been saying for weeks that they should all be rested with the exception of Itoje, and I think he's probably right. We're saying England have got a kicking game plan, which they do, but I can't imagine the game plan for any moment is to kick it right down the throat of a player with no kick chase, which is what
Stuart Hogg's quality.
Yeah, in the last 5 minutes, you know, that we were pressing into their 22 twice and just kick the ball straight down someone's throat. There was no chase. Just that can't be any kind of plan that anyone's got. So I think just whether you guys are right and they're over drilled and they're just doing the same thing over and over again, or whether the Scottish defence got into their heads because their line speed was excellent, whereas ours wasn't nearly what it was. We said about the kick chase was bad when we got into the air. Normally, you know, 7 out of 10 times our back three chasing kicks will field them, and I don't think they caught one clean. And you know, the chase was bad, so the Scottish back three were making some really great returns, and they outkicked us, even though we were kicking the hide off it. It's just bad, you know. So, there's no energy. I think you said that, didn't you, Phil?
Yeah. But I mean, Ben, you said the Scots line speed was excellent. I thought the Scots line speed was what you'd expect from international rugby. They came up as a flat line at a reasonable speed. It wasn't like World Cup semi-final where England were right up in the face of New Zealand every time they got the ball and pushing them back. Farrell had plenty of time to think about making a decision. He just had a fairly tight blue wall there in front of him to decide whether to go round or through or whatever. I mean, there was a time when it was Farrell who did it, wasn't he? He got the ball. We were about on their 22 and he got the ball and put a little kick through for the winger to chase straight into Stuart Hogg's hands.
Yeah, that was one of the ones I was talking about.
It was
right
just
at the end.
Absolutely terrible. But England's line speed, it was like Newquay Hornet's second 60 minutes into a game on at Bodmin in the middle of winter when you're carrying 6 stone of extra mud round with you.
Well, I think it was... I want to give credit for this because it wasn't something that I noticed myself, and I think it was Tom May tweeted. He posted that screenshot we've all seen of Farrell kicking with the 5-man overlap.
Yeah.
But
what he also said is what's just as concerning is how many Scottish players aren't in that picture. But he said they've dropped out of picture because they're waiting for the kick.
Yeah.
Because they know it's coming. You know, I think the other thing that is probably frustrating is we had a chance. You know, England were getting absolutely battered in the first half. They're only 8-0 down.
Yeah, well,
only 8-0 down, and then Finn Russell had a rush of blood, and you know that was their chance. You know, 8-6 at half time, and other than that one kick away, Scotland can completely controlled the next 10 minutes. You know, there was no urgency from England. There was no. Don't know what was said at halftime, but whatever it was didn't work.
Well, I think that they got penalised to death so hard in that first half that, you know, what was it? Was it 10 penalties at halftime? I'm sure it was right up there. And they were so when Scotland were in that yellow card period, they just were able, they didn't go anywhere. If you notice that 10 minutes, they didn't go anywhere. They just kept the ball, almost knowing that England couldn't really compete because they'd been pinged so much. So that they'd been almost pinged to death and frightened of doing anything to try and get the ball back at the ruck. One of the things that frustrated me the most was Vunipola's yellow card. Now, you don't see it very often, and I don't know, you know, I don't know really how the laws work with regards to this, but England given away a number of penalties all around for a number of different offences. I don't think I've ever seen, you know, a bit like a centre midfielder in football where he goes around, runs around kicking people for 10 minutes, you know, little niggly fouls and just goes 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, you get a yellow card now, persistent infringement. Fucking give it a rest. Billy Vunipola, yeah, it was a high tackle, not yellow card worthy, but it was actually, I think he bounced off of Johnny Hill and it was, you know, it was a high tackle. Right, no qualms about that at all. The Andrew Brace went, well, I've warned you. You gave away a penalty over there, penalty over there, penalty over there, penalty over there, penalty over there. All for different things. So he's going to the bin. Now that to me is bullshit. And I don't think I've ever seen it done or applied in that way. Because ultimately, the giving away a penalty, it's not... If it was in the 22 for consistently slowing the ball down, then you're doing it for a reason and you should be punished. Every time England gave away a penalty in loads of different areas of the field, Scotland were able to clear the line, clear to touch, put pressure on England. That's the pressure. Why is somebody getting a yellow card for a very soft, high tackle on the halfway line? Because he's now applying some kind of totting up process. Absolute bullshit.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, Ross. I think if it's red zone, if it's 10 yards out, even if it is just for a high tackle, repeated penalties in the red zone, you say, fair enough, it's a yellow card. But they're all over the shop. And on the penalties, there was a bit of a chat on the Twitter group about England's attack not being good enough, or the props, the forwards not giving the backs a solid enough platform, which is why we were giving away the penalties. We gave away 90% of those penalties, in my recollection, when we didn't have the ball. It was our defence that was giving away those penalties, not our attack. We didn't have the ball long enough in attack to give away a penalty.
Yeah,
because we kicked it away. But no, you're right. I just can't see it. On a technical point, Alex Corbusiero, definitely well worth following on Twitter, has picked up on something.
I saw this, Phil, yeah.
Over the last, he's been hammering this for the last year or so with various different sides about second row positioning. And there's a screenshot that he's put on that shows the England second rows, and this is in the second half when most of the subs have come on. The England second rows have a good 18 inches between them of clear space. And as a result, the England props have about a foot between them of clear space and the eights pushing on absolutely nothing. So when you're there, particularly as the scrums get longer time-wise, it all comes onto the front three to carry that full weight, whereas the Scotland core, that six down the middle, 3-2-1, are all in a dead straight line. You've got the flankers out at an angle pushing in, and as a result, you've got a full eight push going on there. And it's something the Irish have done... changed a lot recently, and in particular CJ Stander used to do it, where he would do that kind of split leg stance and holding onto the second rows and pulling them back before the hit, and then when the hit comes, leaning forwards. And the reason you're doing that is because the second rows don't have their legs in a solid enough position to take their own body weight, so you're having to hold them back. And as a result, the whole thing's looking to lean forwards. Whereas if the second rows change their feet, have their feet on an even stance, close up, tight together, everybody holds their own body weight and you can push in a straight line for longer. Real technical thing, but I really like the fact that somebody's gone to the effort to point it out and to show it, who knows a lot more about this kind of thing than I do.
It's a great point. It's a great. I didn't see that. So I think I'll look at that. Doug,
I don't know what that means.
Doug, I know you're at London Irish, so your viewing was limited live on Saturday, but have you got any thoughts on England, on Eddie Jones and etc.
I think I summed all that up last week, mate. I could probably save us 10 minutes here by not repeating myself. But I think we need to stop thinking of Scotland as this sort of Italy, like full fat Italy, if you know what I mean. They're probably my favourite team to watch. They've got a lot of good players. You've got to remember that there's players not even considered good enough for that side at the moment, like Hutchinson at Saints. Who was the...
And others.
Hugh yeah. Jones.
You've got the guy at Newcastle, John Hardy.
Derry Graham.
Who probably would have been in that squad had he not have really enjoyed going on the Bugle. But I think they're just a good side, and they show what can happen if you've got players who have got a bit of spark and that want to do things with the ball. And I'm not even upset we lost, really, because I think the only way things are going to change is if we lose. What I will say is, I said this to Ben last night while we were watching the Super Bowl, if you go back and listen or read anything about the performances of England in the World Cup, even going back that far, we didn't play well in the World Cup. We had one good performance, and admittedly, it was probably the best England performance of 15 to 20 years. But we weren't that good. And I think the fact that we keep scraping out ways to finish top of these no-mark tournaments and Six Nations, and
it's like when we got to the final of 2007.
We beat probably the worst Australia side ever in the quarterfinals. We beat Tonga and we beat America, and even in that Tonga game, for a long time we couldn't get the job done. And I remember being in a bar in Kumagaya watching that game and thinking, and the Welsh were giving us all sorts. They were giving it all the, we want to play you in the quarterfinals, you know. So don't dress up. We're not playing good rugby. We're getting the job done, which is great, but it's not going to be enough to beat South Africa and New Zealand on a regular basis. And that's the top and bottom of it. And you can say he's doing this, oh, they're just concentrating on defence, they're just doing X, Y. Just stop with the bullshit. Eddie Jones has got to stop with the bullshit, and he's got to pick players on form, and he's got to pick players that, you know, he's got to create a little bit of jeopardy in that squad, because I think there's so many players there. And these Saracens players are basically in an armchair. Oh, well, we don't have to play. We don't have to do anything. And if we play bad, we're still going to get picked.
Just rock
it's
up
exactly
England.
The same problem that the England football team had under Ericsson and then later on Capello. You had a load of players, Steven Gerrard, John Terry. Didn't matter how bad they played, they were getting picked for the next game. And I think that's sort of set in a little bit with England. There's a little bit of selection complacency going on.
So before I say anything, Ben's got one of these automatic Skype backgrounds on. And he's just taken a drink, and his glass, I assume it was a glass, merged into the background. So it looked like he was pouring water from nothing down his throat. take an example of that, Doug, and Ben alluded to it earlier. You got Elliot Daly, who hasn't played a good game for England for quite some time. But not only that, he's played some shocking games for England, and he's shown himself to be pretty lacking at various times under the high ball, pretty lacking at various times tackling wise. His attempt at tackling Van der Merw for their try was just abysmal. It was the kind of thing that you just, like, if a kid does it at under 15, the rest of the team hangs their head in shame. It was just absolutely shocking. And yet he keeps getting picked. And we've got Anthony Watson, who's a natural fullback, and a glut of other wingers wanting to come and have a go.
With Daly, you've got him in there because I assume the idea is he becomes a playmaker, and you're sacrificing some of the sort of natural fullback attributes for a playmaker. But he's not doing that. It's like Russ said in the France game, he was just running straight ahead into the first chaser. There was nothing other than that. And
he's got a big boot.
Yeah, and he's just joining the line, and it's either not getting to him or being kicked away. So you might as well pick a fullback that can do the fullbacky things.
Let's look at the facts, right? We've probably got the fifth best scrum half playing scrum half. We've got the third best, maybe fourth best fly half playing at fly half. Sometimes he plays at 12 and he's not even in the he's probably top two or three 12s. Then you've got a 13 who should be a 12. You've got a fullback who should be a winger. A winger who should be a fullback. A second row that should be a flanker that should be a second row. A number eight that should have been a flanker. Probably the most destructive flanker in Europe not playing. His selections are just completely bizarre. He's picking Paolo Adogo, and yeah, fair play, you've had a couple of good games at 12. He's picked him in the side with no intention of playing him ever again after this Italy match. And believe me, he'll play in this Italy match, and then that will be him gone. He selects a shadow squad, which makes absolutely no sense at all. He signs his mates to coach the team. He has picked an attack coach who has been a sevens coach for the last 15 years.
Someone tried to, let me finish.
That he's sucking millions of pounds out of the RFU on the regs, which is consequently having a knock-on effect for the championship, which is ruining the feeding line through to the premiership. So he's ruining two leagues. The women's game has been picked apart and destroyed to fund the men's team. You've got training camps which are completely random and useless, but when in a time when everyone is just saying players need rest, the man is sucking English rugby dry and he's going to destroy it. Him and the people that are in charge at the RFU are going to ruin English rugby for the next 20 years if they carry on down this path. And frankly, I just want him to go away.
Yeah. I made the comparison on Twitter of Eddie Jones to Jose Mourinho. And I don't know whether you saw it or whether you...
except Jose Mourinho is actually successful.
Well, he has been successful.
What's Eddie Jones actually won?
He beat South Africa
with Japan. That's it. Yeah. That's all he's done.
The obdurate and the insistence on sticking with a game plan that clearly doesn't work. You know, I get the premise of playing without the ball and forcing teams to make mistakes. I get it. But that relies heavily on the kicking game being accurate. Now, you should know within the first 15, 20 minutes of a game if your kicking game is going to be on point and accurate. And then you need to start. Then you need to kind of rethink. Don't keep, like, the definition of insanity is go keep carrying and doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, right? You know, and that's the same as Mourinho. Stubborn tactics, stubborn people, blame the players. I mean, I did say in my tweet that they refused to take any responsibility. They put it all on the players. Eddie Jones then came out and said, I prepared the team badly. So then somebody decided to tell me that I was an idiot and he took responsibility. The fact that he took responsibility for one game, does not change a summer or make a summer. It's a history of just ignorance as far as I'm concerned. And the point about Simon Amor, Doug, that you made, obviously he's sevens coach. Some other guy decided to tell me, well, yeah, you know, the reason England's attack isn't great because the attack coach has only been there for just over 12 months. Well, so fucking what? That's his job. Like he can't coach an attack that is literally non-existent. England's attack on Saturday was non-existent.
You're totally right. Let's wind it back a little bit to something you said. You said to get a game plan that doesn't work. And actually, if his game plan is to play a kicking game, an aggressive kick chase, an aggressive defensive line, turn over ball, spin it wide, see what happens, like happened in a few of the games, that's a game plan that does work. Where he has absolutely zero skills is in going 5 minutes into a game, shit, this isn't working. We need to move to plan B. I don't reckon any of the players have in their head a plan B. I reckon they only have a, this is exactly the way we're going to play for the full 80 minutes. They don't have a, you hear it in all of these coaching things that teams have plans A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And at some point somebody goes, right, we're going to switch to doing this. I don't reckon they have that. They have one way of playing and only that one way of playing and zero flexibility within the whole thing. And when it doesn't work spectacularly. And when it does work, it needs absolutely everything to go 100% right. There were games in the autumn when we said Ben Youngs looks half decent, but then 9 games out of 10, he looks like horseshit. So actually, let's have a game plan that, if you're going to keep picking him, says what it's going to be like when he plays horseshit. And he can't kick the ball. And we need to do something different.
Go on, Ben.
If you're going to play Ollie Lawrence, use Ollie Lawrence. Smack him up the middle a few times and get him thinking about he's going to be getting the ball.
Then you can play your kicking game because you've got that secondary threat, or vice versa. The point is, you're just doing the same thing over and over and over again. You're not keeping them guessing. And Ben, you even said about the Scotland players that they were just dropping off for the kick.
Yeah, so exactly. Knew it was coming. But what I was going to say is we should also shouldn't pretend that Scotland were winning the game by playing like they were 3 or 4 years ago. They actually played the game plan that I think England would try to play on a good day.
Yeah.
They defended well. They got quick ball whenever they could. And they actually kicked a lot, but they kicked a lot better than we did. But if they saw something was on, they went for it rather than what England were doing. You know, when England play well, it's because they're getting fast ball and they're using big runners close in off the 10, and then they go wide. And if England can get quick ball, and a lot of that does depend on Phil's talking about Lawrence, but obviously normally it would be Tua Lagi playing that role. If he's in and he's making ground, and the two Vunipolas are making ground, England like a completely different side to what they look like on Saturday.
We had a period, a set of phases, maybe 5 or 6 phases, and it was Ben Youngs off a line out, if you remember, who managed to cross on the crash, which is the fucking oddest thing. And we went through some phases, and we got quick ball, and we went through, and we were punching holes, and it was going well. And then Ben Youngs, like they said on commentary, David Flatman said on commentary, Hastings and can't remember. England had too many options for Ben Youngs there, but like
there's no such thing as too many options.
No, so he had too many options, yet chose to just throw the ball on the floor and pass to no one. Like that to me that's absolute bread and butter stuff, and you cannot continue to make those sorts of mistakes. And
Scott Hastings looking old as well.
If you can't pick your option as a 9, you either hit your 10 or you hit a forward. That's it.
Well, he had two forwards running straight up the guts and Farrell in behind, and he just didn't do either thing.
Clue: don't give it to Farrell.
Yeah. but it's just so frustrating.
But what frustrates me as well is you've got some really good players out there, like the Simmons, like Jack Willis, who's flirting around the edges, like Marcus Smith. And Eddie will say that he won't...
Don Brandt.
He won't pick them because they don't fit the system. But Ben Youngs doesn't fit the system. Dan Robson certainly doesn't fit the system. He's not a kicking 9. That's absolutely not his role within the team. He says we won't pick them because they don't fit the system, and the players he's picked don't fit the system either.
Yeah.
So
you're making the mistake of debating something that Eddie Jones said as being remotely grounded in fact.
I'm not debating it. I don't want an answer. I'm telling him he's wrong.
He's just full of shit. He's full of shit. He's a pathological liar. He lies almost as much as Donald Trump.
And this game's been coming for 18 months.
This result could quite easily have happened against Ireland in the autumn when we didn't have any ball. Johnny May scored that breakaway try, if you remember. I think we discussed it last week. Like, we didn't play very well in any of those games in the autumn. We beat Georgia. We limped over against Georgia. We beat Italy in the last game of the Six Nations. We beat Wales, and they were shit anyway, so that doesn't matter. And, like you're right. This has been coming because, like, Scotland knew how we were going to play on Saturday. They just knew exactly what we were going to do. And they obviously prepared for it. They obviously worked on it. And, you know,
whereas we've done the fifth division thing of saying this is how we play, so this is the way we're going to play. I said it on last week's pod. Actually, a back row of Curry, Wilson, Vunipola isn't what you want against Scotland, because and Richie will tear you to shreds, and they did. You need something that's a bit more mobile there. You play Wilson at eight and Willis on the flank.
Yeah,
you just need something that's a bit different.
Yeah, you're right. You did say that last week, and you're right. I just wanted sort of the lever on the coaching piece. One, the very best coaches prepare their teams to go and win those rugby matches. But what they also do is they give them and create an environment of freedom that if that particular game plan isn't working on the field at that time, the coach can't, once they step over that white line, the coach can't affect anything until halftime. So what they do is then they create an environment that their leaders, and in this case, Owen Farrell, who obviously playing at 10 should be controlling the game, have an environment to alter and change said game plan when they see things aren't working. And I don't see that England environment, you know, I could be completely wrong because I'm not in there, but I don't see that England environment being open and honest enough for the players to express themselves outside of that game plan when things aren't going their way. And that, to me, is a really, really big problem.
Agreed. I think if that was a club side, I think we'd have seen similar to what happened at Harlequins. I think we'd have seen a load of players leave and go elsewhere, and the other players revolt until the coach
just
gets replaced.
Happens in team sports around the world, in all sorts of sports. So there you go. That's England. They play.
If that was the West Indies cricket team, the players would all be on strike by now.
That's right. But England play Italy this weekend at Twickenham. The result will be what the result is. It'll be an England win. Do you think that there'll be an alteration in game plan? Do you think there'll be a significant alteration in personnel? Doug, you mentioned you fully expect Paolo Adogwu to come on, probably even off the bench, just to really rub salt into the wound.
Do you think there'll be three sunsets on Saturday? We'll do exactly the same we did against Italy. We'll just score more points because Italy are shit.
They'll stick in Mako, Vunipola and Sinclair because they can.
Is Sinclair back now?
Yeah.
Sinclair's back. Mako, is he fit now?
I mean, I must admit, when I saw that front five before the match, I did have a little flutter. I was like, that doesn't look as strong as it normally does. I thought Stewart had a half-decent game, but, you know, he doesn't really strike fear into you.
He's not Mako, is he?
No, I think. Sinclair. Yeah, I think that. So Phil's right. I think those two will come in. I mean, I said earlier, I think I'd drop the Saracens players other than Todd
Jay. They shouldn't be in the squad anyway. There's been rules. They're not untouchable. Their team's been relegated. They shouldn't be playing.
Stephen Armitage.
Exactly.
Mark Wilson was made to go to Sale on loan last season.
I genuinely thought Phil was trying to get at Armitage in the team then.
Josh McNally literally had to leave London Irish. Remember, because in the year London Irish got relegated, he got called up to the England training squad in the summer.
Yeah.
And he knew he had to leave Irish to go to keep that sort of ambition alive. And he went to Bath and, you know, it hasn't happened. But, you know, it changes the direction of, and has changed the direction of many players. Many players' careers. I mean, look at the Zach Mercer. I just don't want to talk about it. He's an absolute wonder. I want him gone.
I mean, I did think in terms of changes, I've not been greatly impressed by Johnny Hill yet or Robson. So I think I'd put Laws back in. Might give Randall a go off the bench. Willis should have a field day against Italy. Go on, Doug.
No, just another thing. Like every coach that's ever coached at Sale says there's no difference. Ben and Tom Curry are just as good as each other. But somehow Eddie's just crowned Tom as just being better. And Ben doesn't get a look in. Never even been in the squad. You know what I mean? This guy's an idiot.
I mean, you can legitimately have him just in the dressing room, couldn't you? And just send him out with a seven shirt, just play for 40 minutes each.
That's a really good joke, Russ. You should probably tell that to everyone because no one's ever heard it, I doubt.
Hey, I'm tired. Why are you being a prick?
Hey, I think we could all pick a 15 that would do a fantastic job on Italy. No, let's not say a 15, a 16, a 15 and a coach who would do a fantastic job on Italy. The reality is it's not going to happen. He'll throw a few changes in because he has to. He'll play the same game plan and it'll probably work and he'll feel vindicated in that game plan and he'll play it for the rest of the Six Nations. And the RFU ballsed up when they said that he was going to go at the end of 2020 or whenever it was, and then they let him extend his contract for 5 years.
He bent them over then massively.
John Mitchell's just signed on again, so chances are that Eddie Jones will be handing over to him when he goes. We've all got that to look forward to.
Right.
Cool. Let's just get off of that before I literally drown myself in a bath with a toaster. Wales versus...
Would there be Ireland? Room in a bath for you and the toaster?
He's got one built in. Toasty maker.
Literally, just such a prick. I haven't even got the energy to argue with you. Wales versus Ireland was...
A pretty shit game.
That was a pretty shit game, wasn't it?
It was a pretty shit game.
Even the red card, like Ireland played well. With the red card, but
let's be honest,
they ran out of gas.
The most blatant red card ever as well.
Yeah.
And there's people saying, oh, back in the days, that would never have been a red card. Of course it flipping would.
Yeah. He literally put the point of his elbow in his mouth.
Yeah.
did you see the immediate criticism of Wayne Barnes? Because he was blindsided for the left elbow. He said, oh, carry on unavoidable because Thomas Francis was, you know, he wasn't in the position to compete. So there was no real reason to clear him out. But, you know, he was still there. So he cleared him out with his elbow to his face. Wayne Barnes couldn't, right? So everybody was like, how the fuck can you not see that? One guy on Twitter said, he said something along the lines of, well, we all at home had the same view as Wayne Barnes.
Yeah. Did we fuck?
I'm not sure we did, mate.
So Doug, when you work internationally, do you sit on the ref's shoulders?
Yeah, fucking hell.
I was actually there. It looked bad from my corner.
The idea of having the TMO
is that if the referee keeps the flow of the game, and if the TMO spots something, it'll deal with it, and that's what happened.
Worked perfectly, I thought.
Yeah.
Dealt with them properly.
Did you see where one of the Irish players fell to ground and Tipperich rang past and he kneed him in the head, like completely accidentally?
No.
Did you see that?
I saw him knee Johnny Sexton in the head.
Sexton just fell over, went straight into Tipperich's knee. Tipperich never even saw him.
I bet he had a moan about that, didn't he?
He was having a moan. But I, as a sort of experiment, I went on Twitter and thought, I wonder if I can find one. And I did. Someone might have been sent off for it.
Tipperich was great. Yeah. Tackle he made in the 83rd minute, having played for ages. Yeah. And was it Henshaw was through? And he chased him down.
Yes. I thought it was an interesting game because I thought there were a lot of good performances in it. I know he's not the favourite of the pod, but Alan Wynne-Jones got through a hell of a lot of work in that game.
I thought he was decent, actually. Well. First time in a while he's been decent.
that must be
maybe the slap from Adam Beard has given him a kick up the ass.
Jake Ball.
Fucking Jake Ball. See, I told you
I'm not a fan of North at 13, but I thought he played really well.
The problem Wales has got, Wales are really struggling for centres and wingers at the moment, and they're going to be missing Johnny Williams and Hallam Amos, and Davis is still out. Williams comes back in, but they're going to struggle to pick two centres because they haven't got two fit.
Well, they'll be.
Tompkins has got a shoulder
North,
issue.
Tompkins
might be injured. He's got a shoulder injury. Oh,
Jesus.
But I thought, to be fair to Ireland,
Jamie Roberts,
once they went down to 14, I thought they played really well.
They dominated that end of the first half, didn't they?
And the end of the second half, because they really carried the ball really well.
What was Gareth Davis doing at the end there?
That was bizarre. But I thought Henshaw was really good.
And, yeah, he was.
Henshaw and Ringrose are very, very good. And I think they started to build a bit of a partnership a few years ago, didn't they?
Mm.
And then all of a sudden it was all about Bundiaki. And like neither of them could get in to play together. It was either Aki and Henshaw or Aki and Ringrose. And I think Henshaw and Ringrose together complement each other perfectly, because a lot like, you know, centres 12s of days of yore, Bundiaki never passed the ball.
Yeah, I think they liked him as an out ball for Sexton when he didn't know what to do. Just give it to Aki.
Sexton's washed, man.
And Murray,
they're half the players they were 5 years ago.
Yeah,
I'd love to see Henshaw and Ringrose outside Marcus Smith. I think that would work fantastically.
Yeah. Don't give Farrell ideas, mate. He'll do that. They'll find an Irishman somewhere in Marcus Smith's lineage.
The other guy I thought played well was Byrne in the second round. I thought he was brilliant.
Byrne is an unbelievable player.
Yeah. But they had some injuries as well. Obviously, Ryan was injured, wasn't he? And
yeah,
they had some interesting stuff. But fuck me.
But no, Ireland did play really well. Wales, I think, I don't know. They just looked a bit rabbit in the headlights still every time they got the ball. It looked like they didn't quite know what to do. And I think Dan Biggar's doing a reasonably good job of trying to marshal some players who don't really understand what's being asked of them yet. That's the impression I get. I jokingly say Jamie Roberts, but anybody who's watching the Mickey Mouse 14 or whatever it's called, absolutely raves about how he's getting on at the moment and says that he's the form centre in that league.
A new lease of life at the Dragons.
Yeah.
Well, mind you, Richard
hometown.
Richard Hibbard scored a hat-trick for the Dragons the other night and they still lost.
I always thought some of the criticism of Jamie Roberts was really unfair, though, because he's one of those players that he might have one trick, but it's a really good trick.
But he's the best at that trick in the world.
And you know, if you're asking him to do something completely different, he's probably not going to be able to do it. But, you know, we're going back a long time now, but those Lions tests he plays, he was unplayable.
Jamie Roberts and George North in the centre. Nobody else is getting the ball, are they?
Yeah, those are the Australia tests when we went down there and Roberts school was
and in South Africa, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, we're going back a long way. But I just thought, you know, he became almost a bit of a joke, and I thought that was very, very unfair.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think we've criticized the Wales sort of centre options for a little while, but like, you know, George North did have a good game yesterday. Johnny Williams, you know, for all the issues he's had, and it's great to see him back playing, I don't see Johnny Williams as an international 12 by any stretch of the imagination. And you know, he could have seen himself, and there's been a bit of clamour from our Celtic brethren that he should have been sent off yesterday as well. Did you see that?
Ludicrous.
I thought that was absolutely mental. What camera position were you in, Doug? Were you in the corner?
I was in the corner of both of Wales's tries, so I got the shot of Reece Lewis. Dammit. Yeah, that the try.
You got that shot. And that was a good finish.
Yeah.
It was a good finish, yeah. I mean, the
commentators, you'd expect him to finish that.
Yeah, but the commentators were acting like they've never seen somebody dive for the line before.
Well, they don't watch rugby league there, do they?
It's true. The one-handed dot down. Do you see either of these sides threatening the French?
No.
No, I don't see either of them threatening Scotland, to be honest.
That's interesting. I mean,
I think Scotland are the team to watch, mate. They showed against England that they can win both ways. They've got players that can break a game open, but they've also got very sort of cerebral, tactical game plan up their sleeve as well, if they need it. And I think Townsend's finally starting to put his stamp on the team. They're moving away from that Vern Cotter kind of whatever that his style was into this team that, as
I mean,
Townsend wants. He wants them to play, as we spoke about last week, what's in front of them, heads up rugby, and to be able to adapt.
They're not going to get a better chance, are they? They've got Wales at home, France away, Ireland at home, and Italy at home.
It doesn't matter about home in a way. That's the one thing I would say about this Six Nations. I remember taking Craig from Long Snapper down to Millennium Stadium to watch this fixture about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe. And the difference was just staggering. Like, there's nothing quite like the atmosphere of a Six Nations match in Cardiff. And it just seems wrong to be playing these games like this. It's a waste.
Does it feel quite soulless in the stadium?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Massive stadium.
It doesn't matter what the standard of the sport is. It's like watching a local Division 5 league play their cup final. You know, when you get your big game, you get your trip to a conference league ground to.
I remember playing a Somerset Cup final at Twerton Park.
Yeah. Doesn't matter that it's Twerton Park. Everything echoes, and it's just a bit soulless. And you know, there's no anthems. Whenever I do an England match or a Wales match, you get so stirred. I still get stirred up by the emotion of the anthems.
Yeah, it's a bit farcical as well, the players' social distancing for the anthems as well.
The Ireland team were spread out bonkers across half a pitch, and then as soon as the anthem finished, they had a huddle.
It was the same in the England game. It was literally from the try line to the halfway line.
And then they're all fucking laying on top of each other for 80 minutes. Yeah. Incredible.
But I think this Six Nations has the potential and probably will be the worst Six Nations in my memory. You've got France, who are looking really good. You've got Scotland, who are considerably better, and I wouldn't disagree with Doug's analysis that they could well finish second. You've got Ireland, who look a bit... They played well, but they still look a bit like they're not quite sure about what they're doing. You've got Wales, who are massively in transition. You've got England, who play a dull, boring style with a coach who won't bend. And you've got Italy, who... I don't know. There's signs of some regrowth, but they aren't up to scratch yet. It could be for quality of rugby, it could be the worst Six Nations in memory.
I also found it really odd that when the fake crowd noise was switched off when the goal kicker was going to do place kicks.
Yeah. I thought the TV
broke. The most pointless thing.
The fake crowd noise was really bad, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it's awful.
They've kind of... It's not perfect in the football, but they've kind of got it half right. But
I was listening a bit to the cricket on Talk Sport. The fake crowd noise there is even worse. There was a massive cheer from the crowd after a push to the covers for no run.
Yeah, pushes to covers. It loves it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Brian Lara cricket. Yeah. So Six Nations this week, as I mentioned, Italy go to Twickenham, Wales go to Scotland, and then it's Ireland versus France on Sunday. Premiership this weekend, Doug's mate and his Sail Sharks team went to Bristol and sorted Bristol out, and they Sale did a real number on Bristol. I don't know if any of you actually watched it. It was, they really, really did a number on them It was defensively as good a defensive display as you'll see. And no Rodrada really. Obviously, it makes a difference to Bristol, but they couldn't seem to get the ball out. And Sale were just all over them. They shut them down in literally every single department. So, you know, Sale will be there or thereabouts, I think. And, you know, whilst they didn't look great in attack, Sanderson and his boys will be treating some teams with some contempt in defence. On Saturday, Doug, you said you were at London Irish for Gloucester London Irish. How was that? Brentford.
It was all right. At one point in the first half, there was more tries than rucks. There were two tries in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah, didn't they just go from end to end, try? Yeah,
it was weirdly mental.
Defence optional.
Irish are pretty good, and Gloucester are not.
Which I think we may have mentioned. Talking of teams that are not very good at the moment, Harlequins continued their good form since the departure of Paul Gustard away at Bath. Ben, are you still starting to worry about Bath?
Yeah.
Okay,
if
great.
If you looked at that Bath side, it didn't look very inspiring.
No.
We said it about Gloucester last week. I just... There's something wrong there as well, isn't there? We don't know what it is, but there's something not right. Players leaving.
Yeah. And they're going to Sale at the weekend as well.
They never win at Sale. It's not on a Friday night, is it?
Probably, mate. Usually I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Any Sale home game usually on a Friday night. Yeah. What else? Exeter played Newcastle yesterday. That was a pretty uninspiring game as well. I think the weather hasn't helped this weekend for a lot of these matches, but Exeter managed to grind out a win against Newcastle, who defensively Newcastle looked very, very good, like really organised, tackle hard, great line speed. But going forward, they don't, other than Radwan, who didn't actually play on Sunday, they don't look great.
Well, let's be honest, right? They were playing Exeter for a start. You tell
who
me
an Exeter team... haven't been great, mate.
No, but you tell me a team who looked good against Exeter, a team that do themselves justice or impress against Exeter. Yeah. I'm not sure there are many.
Fair comment. I just thought the game I watched just wasn't very good.
And the game before that, they lost to Bristol.
Yeah.
You know, fair enough. They handily put away Gloucester. They lost narrowly to London Irish, who are proving to be a form team in the league. And they've beaten Wasps. So I think maybe everyone should just sort of chill out a bit about Newcastle being rubbish.
I didn't say they were rubbish.
No, but
mate.
I've seen a lot of it saying, oh, Newcastle honeymoon's over, isn't it? Well, yeah, their honeymoon's over. They've lost to Exeter and Bristol. But do you know who else has lost to Exeter and Bristol? Fucking everyone.
Yeah, true story. Saints got another win away at Wasps, Doug.
Yeah. Doing their best to be... I just think Saints are uncomfortable being good. They just need to... They can't just win. They just need to make you want to rethink your life choices every time you watch them play.
Oh, amazing. And then the other game was Leicester, a bit of a tri-fest, Leicester versus Worcester.
Yeah, I want to pick you up on your point about Worcester building something.
Yeah.
I didn't really cotton on to it last week, but...
You did a little bit, and now I regret it.
They've been building something for about 8 years, mate. They're building nothing other than a team that will just avoid relegation.
Well, I think if everybody has their way, they'll be avoiding relegation permanently soon anyway. So,
well, funny you should mention that, because I don't know if you know, I wanted to mention this earlier, but the rumour was that Premiership Rugby had agreed to scrap relegation for this season.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, so Premiership Rugby, so I don't know if they released a statement or somebody had leaked that they... relegation had been scrapped for this season. But BT Sport lodged an official complaint about the rules changing, and the Premiership have gone back on it.
Wow.
So
I don't blame BT Sport.
No, I don't. It seems
plans were for a 13 or 14 club Premiership next season,
which is what it should have been 8 years ago, when the other when the other two leagues that you were playing against were 14 clubs. It should have been 14 years ago.
But the vote wasn't about ring fencing. It was just for this season. But BT Sport want some relegation in there to add a bit of jeopardy. But you can see it all. You can see it already that the clubs don't think relegation's happening, and hence Gloucester and Bath are going through fairly large overhauls of their playing squad, thinking now's the time to do it.
As long as BT are paying for the rights, what they say will matter. And I can't imagine BT wanting to be involved in a league where there is no relegation, because they'll be showing matches that have absolutely no bearing on anything from about November,
which we discussed at length last season, which is what it felt like, wasn't it, when Saracens had already gone.
I mean, obviously I should be a little bit careful because I about what I say and how I say it on this, but it's not a good look to
no one listens.
it's not a good look to be changing your mind halfway through a season and then unchanging it. Seems a bit rudderless, which for
PRL is par for the course, isn't it, surely?
But I just wish the Premiership football have been, they've made it work for them this pandemic. They've said, right, if we're all going to be playing, we're going to play every night of the week and we're going to dominate the market.
Yeah,
where's the forward vision with rugby?
Well, here's
why is every game happening on a Saturday?
Saturday afternoon, Doug. I was sat at home in between the Wales, the France Italy match and then England kicking off. On BT Sport, there was live German football, there was a live Premiership football match, and there was some other, maybe, I don't know, alpine skiing or fucking something on BT Sport 3. All the Premiership matches were all were on the app. So you couldn't just watch it on a channel. You couldn't even red button them. You had to watch them on the app for whatever one you wanted to watch. Now, why not have two games? Why not split those games over on a channel and go, right, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 12:30, 3 o'clock. Yeah. Sunday, 12:30.
I don't know why they haven't done what Premiership Rugby Premiership Football are doing.
Just dedicate a fucking channel to it.
Yeah, you could have, I said it this weekend about the Championship, you could have, with these Championship fixtures, the Championship could be playing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Premiership Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or the Championship could be doing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Premiership Thursday, Friday, Six Nations Saturday, Sunday.
Ultimately, when there's no fucker in the stadium, it doesn't matter when the game.
It doesn't matter, and you're going to get more eyes on your product. But they just seem so reticent to take a chance. Like, what is the need to play all these games on a Saturday, other than just a lack of creativity or thought? You look at the top 14. The top 14 in France, if I bring up their fixture list, one sec. French top 14 rugby fixtures. They've got games Friday, Saturday, you know, obviously it's Six Nations, but they play their games at all kinds of times. You know, they move the fixtures around. So if you're going to be playing these games on a Saturday, why aren't the Premiership insisting that there's an 11 o'clock kickoff, a 1 o'clock kickoff, 3 o'clock kickoff, 5 o'clock kickoff? Yeah. It makes no sense, because you're not going to piss off the fans. They're not there. And then you might get 25% extra people watching rugby all day.
That's what I mean. Just dedicate a channel to it.
Like, I've had personal experience of this with Forces Rugby when I tried to get involved in doing some production with them. and you can sort of say you can present ideas, but ideas only get you in the door. No one actually wants to take the chance but rugby is in a position where it needs to take a chance, because if it don't, it's going to die on its ass, and all you're going to have is 12 clubs in the Premiership playing each other every Saturday, and it's not the same. Like the people that are running this stuff come from an era where people work Monday to Friday, and Saturday was for sport, and Sunday was your day off, and it's just a legacy thing.
Yeah,
you know, the reason people aren't playing rugby anymore is because they work on Saturdays. Young lads work on Saturdays. That's what they do. And there doesn't seem, you know, we've said it for years that second and third team games should happen on Friday night. Get people in the bar, fill the bar up. Yeah. Why are you playing all your adult fixtures on a Saturday?
You hit the nail on the head with the Premier League football and that, you know, comparison where spread the games out over a whole week. You know, you might have a couple of games on each night, but
right, this football Monday, on every single day.
Yeah, I mean, it's tiresome, but if you love football,
and I've football watched, on tonight, it's FA Cup I've, next three nights, then yeah, Premiership for four nights on a row.
I've watched more football. You know, I took on Sky Sports.
Mate, I've watched so much football lockdown just because it's on.
Because it's on, yeah, exactly. And if you're a rugby fan, if it's Championship rugby, you would watch rugby because it's on.
It's a real missed opportunity. And if there's any people out there that administer rugby clubs around the country, when you come back, play your twos fixtures on a Friday, your ones on a Saturday if you want, and your threes if you've got a threes, or your Colts on a Sunday, and get people in the bar all weekend. Don't just get them there for one night. Get them there all weekend. Put a Wednesday night fixture on. Put the vets on a Wednesday night. Why are you doing it all on a Saturday? It doesn't make any sense.
Half an hour each way on a Wednesday night. Love that.
Exactly. I have no... We at Dunstable, we had, as you know, the midweek Cowboys, the bar was full up during the game. The first team would come down and watch all the shitters playing and all the people who used to play in the first team but can't because of work commitments. You've got to do this. You've got to start thinking a little bit more outside the box of how rugby's given to people.
We had games on a Wednesday for what's called the intramural matches, so against the other university departments, which was a bit like a second team, but there were plenty of people played on a Wednesday, and then league matches on a Saturday. And you'd have two nights on the piss.
Yeah. We used to play all of our RAF St Morgan matches on a Wednesday night. It was fucking brilliant. We played all the local teams. We used to travel around, like, anywhere with lights, we would go, and we'd have games pretty much every single week, and we play each team three times a season.
What do you reckon would happen, Phil, if you brought that to the committee at Hornets?
Oh God, no, there'd be no hope. So the problem the Hornets have got is that they don't own the bar or the ground.
Right. That instance is different.
Yeah. But as much as the facilities are fantastic and the club has to do nothing towards the facilities, it cripples it as a club because you can only have, there's three pitches, there's only one with floodlights, and you're only allowed the pitches on certain times because other people are having them at other times.
To give you a comparison,
and you get no money for the bar.
Somewhere like Hale, right? They would get old Nigel on the bar, right? They'd switch the bloody lights on 5 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon, they put the Nigel on the bar and they'd get people in there, and then by 7 o'clock the lights would be warmed up and it'd be ideal.
When I was playing in Mid Devon, we trained twice a week, Tuesday, Thursday, and everybody who trained was in the bar for 2 hours afterwards, and there was enough of us. I captained there for my last season, and part of the duties of being captain was that they give you the keys to the clubhouse and you have to go and run the bar after training. It's the way clubs should be run. There should be somebody in that bar every night of the week.
Because rugby clubs are all complaining about having no money now because they've missed out on 2 years of XYZ.
But they're not willing to open.
Then you need to think of a way out of it. And what better way out of it than having your bar open three nights a week?
Yeah. Yeah. Agree.
Once Perrin Porth get their new clubhouse,
yeah,
they could just play tour insides on a Friday night for 6 months. So that absolutely rake it in.
Unbelievable. It'll be so good.
Only 6 months, Ben.
Well, there'll be lots of people about in the summer and the bar will be full. People coming off the beach because the car park.
Do it all year round. Well,
yeah. Anyway, right. You know, this single hour podcast has gone well. Let's get off and do some other stuff. It's been a pleasure. We'll all be back, hopefully, next week. Talk about some more rugby. Hopefully, by next week, we might have a little bit more information from the powers that be about how we're going to get back to normal. Now everyone's being vaccinated and stuff. I'm not going to offer out in any other business this week because we've been going for long enough already. So with that in mind, we'll see you boys next week and go well.
Nice one.
Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.